Welcome to the Baked Potato Podcast.
I'm Perry.
And I'm Lindsay. And today we're going to talk about more lesser-known serial killers.
So grab your pipe and join us.
We are going to be starting off with a pre-roll and a bowl of some flour. So the flour that we're going to have is MAC, which is Miracle Alien Cookies, and Leafly says it's a hybrid marijuana strain made by crossing alien cookies with Starfighter and Colombian. MAC produces creative effects that are happy and uplifting. This strain features a smooth orange flavor that is balanced out by floral accents on a sweet, earthy finish. Growers say MAC nugs are gorgeous and covered in resin. That's true. The nugs I have are good size, and they are, like, you can see that they're sticky. So this, so far, so good. And medical marijuana patients, which we are, choose this strain to help relieve symptoms associated with stress and depression. And the top effects are relaxed, happy, euphoric, uplifted, and creative. So that'll be good.
That'll be good for the podcast.
Yeah. And then our pre-roll is 9-Pound Hammer, which is a strain that we both like.
Really like.
Yeah. It's a good strain. So 9-Pound Hammer is an indica marijuana strain created by Jinx Proof Genetics that crosses Gooberry, Hell's OG, and Jack the Ripper. These dense buds are coated in resin, offering sweet grape and lime flavors. 9-Pound Hammer hosts a terpene profile abundant in myrcene, pinene, and carophyllene. I'm trying my best with the terps, but I can't pronounce all of them. THC levels ranging between 17 and 21, which ours is actually 22, so yeah. Even better.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Effects can be heavy and long-lasting, making the strain useful for pain and stress relief. The effects Leafly shows are relaxed, sleepy, euphoric, happy, and hungry. So hopefully we're not too sleepy and hungry so we can podcast.
Hopefully the creative part of the other weed will
be stronger than the sleepy of the 9-Pound Hammer. Okay, so we're going to go enjoy a pre-roll in a bowl, and we will come back and tell you about some serial killers.
We're back and we're baked. And today we will be puffing on our vapes. I've got blueberry cheesecake in mine.
And then we've got birthday cake in mine. And these are, I forgot the exact THC level on mine. It's in the 80s or 90s, but I don't remember.
I have no idea what mine is either. Yeah, actually the writing on the package of mine is so small, I mean...
You can't read it anyway.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, it wouldn't matter even if I did. I mean, I wouldn't know it.
So Perry's going to start us off with a lesser-known serial killer.
Today, I will be talking about Gerard John Schaefer, who is an American serial killer born in 1946 in Wisconsin. But he was raised in Atlanta and Fort Lauderdale.
Oh, okay.
Like, they kind of
moved... nowhere near Wisconsin.
Yeah, they kind of moved around. He was the eldest of three kids. His parents didn't have a good marriage and divorced when he was young. I couldn't find out what age that they divorced at. Yeah. But it just said that they divorced when
just
he was young.
When he was young. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And it said that also when he was young, he would steal women's underwear.
Oh, little creeper.
Then tie himself to a tree, almost asphyxiating himself because it aroused him sexually.
Oh, God. How old was he?
Young, like, just young. Probably like 9 or 10.
Oh my
That's what
God.
I'm thinking. Because when they, when they were talking about it, that's what I pictured. Because then it kind of jumps to him being 14.
Okay.
You so, know,
yeah,
so
younger than that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So maybe 12, 13.
Okay.
But
either way, it's still disturbing.
Yeah. He also later in life would admit to killing animals, not for food or for any other reason, but just to kill him.
Aww. Odie, don't listen.
Yeah. His first girlfriend, Cindy, was between the ages of 14 and 17.
Okay. When he was 14?
Yeah, when he was 14, he started dating some girl named Cindy, and then they dated till he was 17.
Okay.
But they had very torrid sex and would role play him raping her.
Oh, no.
Which eventually led to her breaking up to him. But not at first, because apparently she liked it for a little while, you know? Like,
that's not healthy.
No.
Oh,
no. In 1976, Schaefer earned an associate's degree in business administration, but he didn't do anything with it.
Yeah.
Because then, in 1968, he enrolled to get his teacher's license, which I think in every single career that he had tried to get, I think it was just a way of trying to get to people to kill them.
Yeah,
you know, like because it was just like
means to a mean or means to an end.
Yeah, and business administration, like that's too obvious. Like you can't kill somebody in your office, you know. But as a teacher, you know, a kid goes missing, you know. He briefly held down a teaching job, but was fired for quote unquote from the principal total inappropriate behavior. Didn't say what, but it's a total inappropriate behavior. So
I don't want to know what he did.
I just let my imagine run wild with that. Yeah, imagination run wild with that. Like, yeah. Then he tried to become a Catholic priest, but was rejected.
Oh.
Why? I don't know. It never explained. I don't know. Yeah. And then in late 68, he married, but only for 2 years. They didn't state his wife's name.
Oh.
She just cited that the reason for ending the marriage was violence.
Oh, that's not good.
No.
So far he's violent in life and in his sexual fantasies and actions.
Yes.
So he's just kind of a violent person.
Yes, sexually and physically. Yeah. Ugh,
that's
and
not
I
good.
Couldn't even imagine what his 14 to 17 year old girlfriend was thinking. Like,
I know,
she's
so young that she feels like she doesn't have a
better
choice.
Yeah, exactly. That's just horrible to me.
Yeah, that's sad. Ugh.
In 1971, Schaefer then set his sights on becoming a police officer.
Oh no.
In spite of the fact that he had failed the psychological test.
They still let him become a police officer?
Yeah.
That's so fucked up.
Yeah. But soon after he was hired on, he was fired for hitting up, like, female traffic offenders for sex. Like, in exchange for...
For their ticket. Like, yeah. I won't write you a ticket if you blow me.
Yeah.
That's
and
gross.
And he just moved and got another job as a cop.
They don't check references.
Apparently not.
Nope.
In July of 1972, he pulled off his first known murdered attempt. Using his first attempt at murder, quote unquote, his first attempt.
So he failed the first time.
Yeah.
That's good.
Using his position as a police officer, he convinced two female hitchhikers, Pamela Wells and Nancy Trotter, that it was illegal to be hitchhiking where they were. And he drove them to a swamp where he stripped them down and tied them to a tree at gunpoint.
Oh.
Soon after restraining the girls, he got a call on his police radio, luckily.
Yeah.
And had to respond to the call, so the girls were able to free themselves, making it to the police station where he worked.
Oh, no.
Right?
That's not good.
So he kind of had to be like, whoopsie, to his boss.
Like they told him it was him?
Yeah.
And he wasn't arrested?
No, he was.
Okay.
No, but he was just like, that's how he, like, apologized to his boss. He was just like, oh, yeah, I did that. My bad.
Well, that's a red flag.
Yeah, huge red flag. Yeah. So, he confessed to what he did and was arrested, but made a plea bargain and was only sentenced to a year with possibility of parole after 6 months. Now, 2 months after posting bail, he kidnapped Susan Place and Georgia Jessup, two other female hitchhikers, and killed them in the same fashion he had planned to kill the first two.
Aww.
Only this time, I can't remember which one it was. I think it was Susan Place. They had found a gunshot wound in the bottom of her jaw.
Aww.
So I guess he shot her, but we don't really know what happened to the other one.
You don't know how she died?
Right.
Oh, okay.
They just said that he buried their bodies, so he could have buried her alive, or
yeah,
I don't know.
I don't know.
When the remains were found, there were too many similarities between the murder and the attempted murder. So for once, the police did their job.
You know what? Let's take a minute.
Right? Yeah.
We have so many shitty cops on this show.
I know, right? The last time we did this show, it was like
it was
time
Ronald...
after time, yes, after time. Yes.
Ronald Dominique got to kill 23 people.
Right.
Before the cops put it together and said, oh yeah, this guy's doing it.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm glad the cops for once are like, yeah, this guy probably did it.
Yeah, so this was enough to give them cause for a search warrant, which they did of his mother's house, which...
Did he live there?
Yeah, okay. Him and his wife had been living there at the time. They found disturbing graphic stories written by Schaefer himself, as well as a lot of guns and knives, and a mountain of evidence showing Schaefer's involvement in at least 30 disappearances of women in the area over the years. Including,
oh, no.
Yeah.
30?
30 women.
Oh.
So, yeah, the cops did their job, but before they did, like, he got away with, like, killing, like, 30 women. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awful.
They found jewelry, clothing, diaries, driver's license, passports, and teeth.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's how they were able to identify these women and know, like, how many, like, he had killed because he had so many souvenirs, and they just matched them to, you know, the cases that missing persons cases,
yeah,
you know.
Oh. I have recent tooth trauma,
so. Yeah, right?
When I'm like, it's home, I'm like, oh, no, not the teeth.
Yeah. He, of course, came up with stupid explanations for why he had all this stuff, but in spite of the evidence, like, he was in spite of the evidence that mounted, like, all mm-hmm. the evidence that they found in the house,
yeah,
he could only be charged with the bodies that were found, which were...
Oh, yeah, because it's really hard to prosecute without a body.
Yes, exactly. So he was only, prosecuted for the murders of Susan Place and Georgia Jessup.
Okay, so only two.
Yeah. But he was charged with life in prison for the crime.
Was sentenced? You said he was charged with life?
Oh, yeah. He was sentenced. Yeah. Sorry, yeah. He was sentenced to life in prison for this crime, but no other charges were brought against him. And his wife visited him only one time in prison to serve him divorce papers. So,
well, that was nice.
Yeah. Even though he was in prison, that didn't stop him from other crimes, such as mail fraud. He would have people post sex ads in magazines, then send them letters, and... I don't know if they would send him money or...
Like nudes?
I guess.
Yeah.
But...
Wouldn't they know they're sending it to a prison?
You would think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, in order to mail it to him, I don't... Mm-hmm. I guess if he just gave him the address, you don't have to put the prison's name to address it.
Yeah, you could just put your name and... Well, you have to put your cell number. Don't you?
I mean, I don't know. I think your prisoner number, maybe. Like, their identification numbers.
You have to put something. You would know you were sending something to a prison.
I would think so.
I feel like you would.
Yeah.
But he would also send letters to other prisoners pretending to be women in order to sue romantic relationships with these men.
Okay.
But just to fuck with them, because he wasn't a homosexual. He just wanted...
to mess with the guys?
Yeah, he just wanted to pretend like he was a woman.
Oh.
And... like, mess with these guys. Like...
yeah. But he wasn't trans or anything like that?
Well, I mean, when they said it, he would steal women's underwear, but they never... that's all... they never talked about...
didn't say, like, if he was wearing it or if he was, like, jerking off into it.
Yeah. And they never stated anything else about him having any kind of homosexual tendencies or...
which you can... you can dress as a woman and not be trans or gay. I mean, we're not saying you can't be, obviously. Right. And neither one of those is a negative. I was just curious in his case.
Yeah, I know that really...
if there was...
No, he was just a...
but he's just
fucking
a psychopath.
Sicko. Yeah.
Yeah, he just wanted to mess with people.
Yeah.
And not be himself.
Exactly. And though, even though he wasn't well-liked, he was befriended by other serial killers, such as Ted Bundy and Otis Toole.
Oh.
Yeah, two great ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. But while he was in prison, Schaefer filed 19 appeals, which, of course, were all denied.
Good.
One of his favorite hobbies in prison was to write macabre stories, some of which were suspected to be true. I think they're all true.
Oh.
Because later on, well, I'll get to that. But, oh, well, I'm getting to it right now. He was eventually approached by one of his high school friends, who was a true crime author, in 1989. Her name was Sandra London. And she was able to get his stories published under the title... Killer Fiction, which failed commercially. I can't imagine why.
Yeah.
but received mountains of cult following.
Okay.
The two, Susan and Schaefer, or I'm sorry, Sandra London and Schaefer, were engaged briefly, but she broke it off with him to be with a different serial killer.
Was it an English serial killer?
Danny Rowling,
oh,
aka
that's
the
guy
Gainesville Ripper.
That's who Scream's based off of.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
But I've heard of Sandra London before, but I've heard a podcast episode over Hybristophilia.
Oh,
and she was in it. That's where I know that name from.
And do you want to go ahead and tell them what hybristophilia is?
Oh, yeah. Quick? It's a sexual attraction to criminals. So
yuck. In 1995, Schaefer was found dead in his cell, stabbed 42 times.
God damn.
And his throat was slashed. He was murdered by Vincent Rivera, a fellow inmate. And it didn't say why. I mean, I could only
Maybe
imagine.
He's a cop in jail.
Yeah.
And he was kind of a psycho.
Sending letters to these prisoners and women.
He could have fucked with
him.
Yeah,
he could have. There's no telling why this man killed him. But, I mean, he wasn't well-liked. It said that. He was only liked by other serial killers. So, come on. You know, like. In 1997, Killer Fiction was published again. This time with additional texts by his girlfriend and her experiences with him and drawings made by Schaefer.
Oh.
So not only did he write some disgusting stories.
He drew them?
Yeah. He Gross. Had time to then illustrate them after he found out that he got a cult following for...
That shouldn't have been published, but at least he was dead, so he didn't get the attention or profit off of it, which you can't because of Son of Sam laws. But at least in this country, you can't.
Yeah.
But that's still, that's just gross.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So, this is suspected to be kind of like a short timeline of some of the murders that he did, like in 1966, Nancy Leather and Pamela Nader, 21 and 20. Then in September of 1969, Lee Boundaries, 25. She was a childhood friend of his.
Oh.
Yeah. And then he had a date with a girl named Carmen Marie Haylock, who was 22 in 1969, and killed her. Oh. In December of 70, he killed a 9-year-old and an 8-year-old, Peggy, Ron, and Wendy Stevenson. He confessed to these murders in a letter that he had wrote in prison, and he confessed to eating their bodies in an Albert Fish style.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. That sounds like Albert Fish writing a letter about it.
Gross. In 1972, so Belinda Hutchins, 22, also again a date with Schaefer.
Hmm.
Never going on another date again.
I know, that's terrifying. And there's like, there's been modern day like Tinder killers and Craigslist killers.
No,
like, oh my god.
I know, you just, I'd be
terrified. If something ever happened between me and my husband, I don't think I'd date. I think I'd just be single.
Yeah, I know. I'm to that point where I'm just like, you know what? Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to meet a serial killer. I don't want to die. I've got too much to live for.
Exactly.
Maybe when I'm 50.
Yeah.
And then just a couple others that we know of. Deborah Susan Lowell, who was 13.
Oh.
Elise Farmer, who was 14. And Mary Briscolina, who was 14.
Oh, so he killed a lot of children.
Yeah.
That's sad.
So, I'm sure that he was able to, you know, I don't know if maybe while he was doing his job teaching, maybe if that's how he got a hold of the children.
It could have been. That makes sense. Or even as a cop, he could pull over and talk to anyone.
Exactly.
And have authority, especially over a child who's told to listen to the police.
Yeah. So. And I don't know if, like, those specific ones are from, like, I mean, they had to have been from the evidence they found in his house, you know,
because
they're very specific and the dates and times that they were murdered. So,
yeah.
What if those were all the people's teeth that
The teeth! I forgot about the teeth!
Yeah, I know, right? It fucks with you. Yeah.
Oh! Why?
That's so nasty.
Why is that your souvenir?
I know, of all things, like,
teeth.
Well, I mean, so you can't identify the bodies.
I guess that's true. That would be why.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Well, glad he's dead.
Me too. Yeah, I'm glad he died in prison. So I mean, it was a better story than last time. I mean, he was caught early.
Yeah.
Well, kind of.
Yeah.
Early-ish.
Yeah, and besides the 30 possible murders.
And then he was murdered in prison, so...
Yeah, so he wasn't there very long, and...
Yeah.
He can't...
Hurt anybody else, or fuck with anybody else, so...
Yeah, or make up weird stories, and try to publish them.
Yeah.
Although his ex-girlfriend apparently can, posthumously.
You know, and sadly, I really want to find that book now. And read it, but I don't want to buy it. I just want to find it at the library or something.
Yeah, so you can just see what it is. I know there's been some, like, books written by killers or written by people in the words of the killers. Like, Manson, in his own words, was not written by Manson, but...
Right.
Those type books. And they're not always the most reliable narrator, though. And that's, like, with my guy. He is suspected of more than what he was charged with.
Mm-hmm.
But he's kind of an unreliable narrator if he's the one telling us about all these murders. Like, do you want to believe him?
Yeah, exactly. How do you believe, like, a killer? Like, aren't they, like, master manipulators, you know?
Some of them, yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, let's talk about what we're going to smoke next.
Alrighty, I think that we should smoke this other lovely pre-roll that I brought called Berry Bubba.
Yeah, let's let you know what Leafly says about that. They say Bubba Berry, or Berry Bubba, is a sedated cross... No,
No, it's not. Berry Bubba is a sedating cross of pre-98 Bubba Kush and DJ Short's Blueberry. This strain lays into the body, weighing on the limbs and mind with a deep, stony buzz. The relaxing and calming qualities of this strain lend to meditation and recuperation.
Ooh!
Bubba Berry's aroma is sweet and berry-forward. Its flavor is also fruity and musky, with a hint of spice on the finish. Reserve this strain for the end of the day, as its heavy physical effects saddle the consumer with a nearly insurmountable couch lock and a state of contentment.
Oh! Uh-oh! Maybe we shouldn't, but we're going to anyways.
Yeah, we got into couch. And this one, it has relaxed as the top effect, sleepy is after that, euphoric, happy, and hungry. So we may have skunk berry instead of that. Which I don't know which one we'll have, but I'll tell you about both. Skunkberry is the odoriferous hybrid cross of parent strain skunk and blueberry. Makes sense. While the genetic makeup of this strain might seem commonplace, the unique terpenes specific to each of these fine cannabis varieties and their robust varied lineages contribute to the complexity of this strain's effects. While the onset of the buzz is uplifting and euphoric, the strain simultaneously melts physical pain away without being overwhelmingly sedative. I think we might do that instead.
Yeah, I think that sounds better.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to be into couch.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do Berry Bubba after the show.
Yes, as a rap joint.
A rap, indeed.
A rap party.
Yes.
Okay, we're going to go have some skunk berry, and we'll come back and tell you about another serial killer.
We're back and we're baked.
And I'm going to tell you about Patrick McKay. He was known as the psychopath and the devil's disciple.
Ooh, I like it.
Our story begins in 1950s London. Specifically, September 25th, 1952. It was that day that the accountant Harold McKay and his wife Marion welcomed a baby boy. Harold was a Londoner, and Marion was of Creole descent, originally from Guyana. Which, when I think of Guyana, the only thing I can think of is Jonestown.
Oh.
Because that's where it was.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Like, that's all I think of, but that's where his mom was from. They named their child Patrick David McKay. For the first decade of his life, Patrick was physically abused by his father. Harold kicked Marion in the stomach when she was pregnant with him.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, and then after Patrick was born, he abused him physically. But he never hit his daughters. He had two daughters, and he never hit them. But he would hit Patrick. Harold was an alcoholic with a weak heart, and he died in 1962. Because of heart failure related to his alcoholism. And his last words to 10-year-old Patrick were, "Remember to be good." Which, considering he most likely beat Patrick when he wasn't good, those words ironically fell on deaf ears. Because Patrick was not good.
Yeah, no kidding.
Patrick was unable to come to terms with his father's death. He lived in denial, keeping a photo of Harold with him and telling people he was still alive.
And that's creepy.
He refused to attend the funeral in Scotland, so he just never accepted that his dad was dead. He eventually fulfilled the absent place of the father figure slash head of the family. Just like Harold, he was started beating his mother and two sisters.
Aww.
So Marion tried relocating to start over in Gravesend, but that was to no avail, as the police had to be called to their house around 4 times a week. From him, going crazy on them.
Lord.
And her needing the police to come get him away from them.
Four times a week? You would think that they would have taken him away by then.
I know.
Like.
You would think so.
After at least the third or fourth call.
Yeah, between the ages of 12 and 22, he was forcibly removed from the household 18 times. So I don't know why he was allowed to go back.
Once, twice a year,
yeah.
I wonder if it was around whenever his father died.
Oh, I don't know. Could have been. He might have got worse around that.
Yeah.
Like many other serial killers, he enjoyed animal cruelty and arson.
Oh, yuck.
He even mixed these once and set their pet tortoise on
fire. Oh, my God. A turtle? Yeah. No.
That's so sad.
God.
Yeah. Oh. By 15, he was officially diagnosed as a psychopath.
I should say so.
Yeah.
Really diagnosed, doctor.
Yeah. Behavior that led up to this diagnosis included extreme tantrums when he didn't get his way, even though he was a teenager.
Yeah.
Fits of anger. Stealing from elderly women's homes and people in the street. Trying to strangle his mom, Marion. So he attempted to murder her.
Mm-hmm.
Bullying younger children, and then a different attempted murder. He claimed had he not been stopped, the boy that he was trying to kill would have been his first murder.
Oh, shit. So, how old was the boy? Do you know?
Or, I don't know.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. I don't know anything other than just it was a boy he attacked, so I don't even know, like, the means. If he tried to strangle him like he did his mom, or if he was beating him and they took him off, I don't know.
Yeah.
The doctor who diagnosed him with psychopathy was Dr. Leonard Carr, and he predicted Patrick would grow to be a, quote, cold psychopathic killer, end quote. So he knew at a young age, he was like, this guy, he needs to be in the hospital, he's going to be a killer, you know.
Right.
In October 1968, he was committed to Liverpool's psychiatric hospital, Mossside Hospital. And it's currently Ashworth Hospital. So if we have any listeners in Liverpool, that's what it is now. He lived in this hospital until 1972. The article Wikipedia sourced for the release date is no longer available. So I don't know why he was released at all. Because when I looked for articles, anytime the articles I read about him, they would just say like he was in and out of the psychiatric hospital from this year to this year. You know, they never said why he got released. But by 1972, he was out. Like many other contemporary psychopaths, he had a fascination with Nazism. It's not surprising genocide appealed to him.
So. Right, because he wanted to kill.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And he was a psychopath.
Yeah.
So he filled his flat with memorabilia. He was frequently drinking and or on drugs around this time also.
So that can help to his mental state.
Exactly. And I did look into when like antipsychotics were introduced and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Typical antipsychotics were introduced in the 1950s, and then atypical antipsychotics, which are used more often, were introduced in the 70s. So they should have had him on medication.
Yeah.
Since he was hospitalized that long.
Yeah.
So he should have been on some kind of medication still.
Right. Yeah. Like, he kind of slipped through the cracks there. Like.
Yeah.
But back then, medicine was so crude and people didn't keep up with their patients, you know? Like.
Yeah. And there was an article that was talking about how the system failed with Patrick McKay, like how he slipped through the cracks.
Mm-hmm.
And it was no longer available. So I couldn't read it. I was like, from the title, I was like, oh, this is perfect. I'll see, you know, I'll read this. And I didn't get to read it because it was no longer available. So in 1973, he befriended a priest named Father Anthony Crean on a walk. They this met can't near.
Be good. I'm joking. That.
They met near Marion's home in Kent. So he was just on a walk and he met a priest. And they started hanging out together and they would meet up at pubs for drinks together and talk. And the priest believed that showing the love of Christ to wayward people could transform them. So that was a lot of times why he would spend his time with maybe not the most pleasant of people.
Right.
So not surprisingly, Patrick broke into Crean's house and stole a 30-pound check.
So, wow.
Yeah, so they had been friends, and then he broke in. And today it would be roughly around like 250 pounds for the check he stole. Despite his pleas not to, Patrick was arrested and charged with the crime. So even though the priest, he tried to tell the police, like, you don't have to charge him, you don't have to arrest him, it's okay, I forgive him, like, things like that. They're like, no,
he committed a crime. He broke
into your house and he stole a check.
Yeah.
He's going to get charged.
No, father, this is not right.
Yeah. So he was prosecuted and ordered to repay the check, but he never did. But ever since then, he felt betrayed. Even though, again, the priest tried to defend him and tried to get him to not be prosecuted, but he still felt betrayed by him. After that, when he broke into his house.
Yeah.
So, again, he's not right in the head. So that kind of explains some of it. According to Mackay, it was around this time that he, quote, drowned a tramp in the River Thames, which later he describes that it was a homeless man. But he just...
Okay, I was going to say, like...
What's a tramp?
Like, who? Well, no, like, because gypsies were called tramps, weren't they? Like,
yeah.
So I didn't know if it was, like, some sort of, like, sideshow person or...
Oh, yeah, no. You know? It was just a homeless man that he called tramp. Mackay claimed his first murder took place July 9th, 1973, prior to the drowning of that man. His victim was a 17-year-old German au pair named Heidi Manilk. He claims to have stabbed her before throwing her from a train.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Her murder is still unsolved. He wasn't charged for that one.
Oh, shit.
But he confessed to that one. That's what he says first murder was. And, like we were talking earlier about how sometimes a killer's not a reliable narrator.
Exactly.
So, I don't... he claims... Yeah. 11 murders, but he's only charged with, I believe, 3 of them. So, but I'm going to let you know about the ones that he says he committed also.
Okay.
Patrick had a habit of robbing elderly ladies. He would,
nice.
Yeah. He would find an older person and follow them to their nice house. Then he would offer to carry in their bags or cat food, and he would gain entry into the house. Once inside, he overpowered them and stole what he wanted. So, he's, you know, an asshole. In 1973, Mary Hines was beaten to death in her apartment. He took credit for this. He claimed shortly after 1974, he threw a homeless man the River Thames and watched him drown. And that's the man that he had referred to as a tramp.
Oh, God.
A murder we know he was responsible for was that of Isabella Griffith in 1974. She was a wealthy older lady, and he went to her house to rob her.
Oh, no. Did he know her at all, or did he just...
Just, like, approached her.
Okay.
And, like, helped her carry in bags from the grocery store.
Oh, so he was, like, the first, like, Buffalo Bill, like, oh, can you help me with these groceries? You know what I'm talking about from Silence of the Lambs?
I don't remember the grocery part with Buffalo Bill.
He's like trying to get that girl into his van. He's like, can you help me with these? Oh, no, it was a couch. It was a couch. I'm sorry.
Oh.
He was trying to get a couch into a van, and that's how he got the girl into his van.
Because
he was like pretending like he had a broken arm.
Like Ted Bundy used
to
do. Okay. Yeah.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. So, once he was inside her house, he strangled her.
Oh, God.
And then went to her kitchen and grabbed one of her kitchen knives and came back and stabbed her. And
overkill?
So, yeah.
What the fuck?
And then robbed her. On March 21st, 1975, 22-year-old Patrick, again, he was like 21 when he killed that woman. Like,
what the
He's just so young and, yeah. I know he's a psychopath, but 22-year-old Patrick went to Father Anthony's house. He still felt betrayed by the man who tried to prevent his prosecution. Crean let Mackay into his home, and he attacked him with an axe.
Oh my God!
Yeah. He ended up killing him. He took him to his bathtub and axed him to death. And the police said you could tell it was like a personal crime because it was way overkill. And, like, he had continually gone at his head with an axe and just obliterated him.
That's horrible.
Yeah. And they knew because of that because of the amount of axe strikes, that it was personal, that it wasn't like a random break-in.
Right.
So yeah. Next, he strangled another wealthy elderly woman, Adele Pierce, just like he had done to the previous one. You know, he gained entry to her house, but he didn't stab her. He just strangled her and then left.
Yeah.
When police looked into the murder of the priest, they immediately suspected the man that stole from him a couple years ago.
Well, obviously.
Yeah. So they arrested Patrick Mackay. After his arrest, he confessed to a total of 11 murders. And Wikipedia incorrectly says he confessed to 13, but he didn't. Oh. It was only 11. And the sources for those articles have only 11.
Mm.
So it's just whoever was typing on Wikipedia mistyped it.
Yeah.
In addition to the murders already discussed, he confessed to, in 1974, the murder of 57-year-old Stephanie Britton and her 4-year-old grandson.
Aww.
He said he killed the child because he witnessed his grandmother being killed.
That's so sad.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And then, again in 1974, he bludgeoned a 62-year-old tobacconist, Frank Goodman, to death. He claimed that he kicked him to death over a pack of cigarettes.
Jesus Christ.
And then in 1974, he beat a 92-year-old Sarah Rodwell to death on her front doorstep.
Oh my God, this makes me want to never leave my grandpa alone.
I know.
I'm like, where are you? What are you doing? Are you safe?
Yeah.
Close the garage door before you get out of your car.
I know. It's like, oh, you want to protect the old people now.
Yeah.
In 1974, again, he killed Ivy Davies with an axe or a tent peg. I've read both versions, so I don't know what he killed her with.
Oh.
But he,
either way, it's not good.
Yeah, either way, he bludgeoned her to death.
Yeah.
He later retracted all but 4 of his confessions. And it was the 2 wealthy elderly ladies, Isabel Griffith and Adele Price. He was like, yeah, I did that. And then the homeless man and Father Anthony Crean, which again, they knew it was him on that one.
I know. I was going to say, how can you take that one back?
No, he didn't take that one. Those are the ones he claimed.
Oh.
He took everything else back except those 4.
I got you.
Yeah.
I got you. I see what you're saying now. I was going to say, you can't take that back.
Yeah, no. He admitted to that one and the 2 elderly ladies and the homeless man.
I gotcha.
But the police couldn't identify the homeless man, so they couldn't charge him because they don't know who he killed.
Yeah.
So, and they didn't, it's not like they found the body. So, he was prosecuted for 3 murders. In November 1975, he was convicted for those 3 deaths, but it was manslaughter, not murder. Yeah. The reason it wasn't murder was due to diminished capabilities. He couldn't claim insanity because he has a personality disorder, not a mental illness. Then they're separate categories.
Okay.
And he knows right from wrong. He doesn't have, like, an illness that takes away that distinction. It's just he has a personality disorder. He's a psychopath, so he can't claim insanity. But diminished capabilities brought it down to manslaughter. He was still sentenced to a life term, but with a minimum of 20 years. So ever since 1995, he's been up for parole every few years, and every time he's been denied. And it's been recommended he never be released, but his latest parole denial was because they're investigating his other claimed victims. Police successfully proved he killed Frank Goodman, and other cases are on file, and they're going through to try to see if he really did kill those people or not.
Yeah.
As of 2021, he is Britain's longest serving prisoner.
Wow. With
46 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And when I heard that, I was like, that doesn't sound as long as someone who'd be in prison in America. And so I looked up America's longest serving prisoner.
Yeah.
And that was, I think his sentence started in 1911, but he served 68 years for second-degree murder and then was released on parole.
Oh my God.
Yeah. After serving 68 years.
It's like, what's the point at that point?
Yeah, like, know? How like, old would he have been? I don't remember how old he was, but I'm sure he died shortly after.
Yeah.
He was released.
Or killed himself because he couldn't handle the outside world.
Possibly, I don't know. So that was...
That went dark.
That's it. That was my story about Patrick McKay, the psychopath.
Wow. That guy sounds like a real piece of work. It takes a lot to, like, to kill, like, animals, elderly people, children.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know what there is about, like, age 18 to, like, let's say 54 that makes it okay for you to be killed. But after those, you know, in between those ages, you know, when you're
more
kid
defenseless.
And when you're an elderly person, mm-hmm. like, yeah, exactly. You're more defenseless and it makes you more vulnerable. And
yeah,
it's upsetting. Mm-hmm. It's upsetting that people take advantage of other people.
Yeah, it's very upsetting, especially since he robbed a lot of elderly people.
Yeah.
He just killed those two, well, three, because another woman he had beat.
Yeah.
So he killed three of them, but he still was robbing who knows how many. But, I mean, he's behind bars, and they, like I said, they've recommended he never be released, so hopefully he never will be.
And he's London's problem, like, so.
Yeah. He's not in the States, so we're good.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us.
We had so much fun today talking with you guys.
Yes. And if we got anything wrong or you have something to say, you can email us at bakedpotatopodcast@gmail.com. And you can follow us on Instagram at bakedpotatopodcast. Thank you for joining us for Lesser Known Serial Killers Volume 3.
And we hope that you will join us next time for whatever we decide to do next.
Yeah, we'll talk to you then.